With her own experience with tragedy, emotional and sexual abuse as a child, to meeting the Queen of England, winning 2 all-expense-paid trips, to finding her faith again in her 40s. Janelle Green's story, unbelievable story, will inspire you to have hope, faith, and to never, ever give up on your dreams.
Have you ever felt like giving up, quitting, throwing in the towel? Welcome to Never Ever Give Up Hope featuring Carol Graham. She's an author, health coach, and motivational speaker. Backed into a corner multiple times in her life, Carol shares with you stories on how she overcame some of the toughest obstacles a person can go through in life, but refused to give up hope. Rather than admit defeat, an opportunity was presented, and it involves each and every one of you. Carol will feature spectacular guests who will share their messages of hope, encouragement, and their inspiration to prove why life's adversities only make you stronger. And now, welcoming the host of the show, here's Carol Graham.
Janelle Green is a life and relationship coach who is on a mission to save marriages and heal families from generational trauma caused in childhood. She is deeply passionate about bringing more love and healing to couples and to the world, and loves how coaching others has helped her on her own personal healing journey. Welcome, Janelle.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, let's get into your story. So let's start with, as I mentioned in the intro, the story of abuse that you went through as a child.
Well, I would say more trauma than abuse. There was abuse there, and there's two different stories there, but I'll start with the main one. You know, growing up, I had a great childhood. I had great parents who loved each other, really great role models. You know, they had a business together, they sang together, they danced together, they went to church together. It was close to picture perfect. And then when I was 9, I was sitting on my bed. I remember it was nighttime, and my mom calls us into the living room. And so there I am with, you know, 9 years old. My sister's there, she's 6, and my brother's 3. And at the door is my mom and my dad and a set of luggage. And my mom looks over at us and she says, "Kids, your dad is leaving. He doesn't love us anymore."
Oh, my word.
And, you know, I think she said that just kind of a low jab to my dad. But, you know, what you don't know is that, you know, my dad had an affair with my mom's best friend who had previously lived in our basement, was like my mom's, you know, like sister almost. He had gotten her pregnant, and so my mom asked him to leave. And so there I was, you know, watching my dad leave. And, you know, my dad was a joker, so there was a part of me that was, you know, confused and thinking like he was going to turn around and say, ha-ha, joke. And, of course, that didn't happen. And he went into a car that I didn't recognize, and without a word, he left. And so that was a really, really hard time. And, you know, as I do the work, and I discovered how this really impacted my adulthood, what I discovered was that little 9-year-old had this traumatic experience and made 3 very profound, distinct, you know, beliefs about herself. And that was that she was unlovable because she's a daddy's girl. And if daddy's going to leave, then it must mean she's not lovable. Secondly, can't trust people. Definitely can't trust men. And 3 is everybody she loves will leave her. And so fast forward, you know, there I was in my 20s going through my first marriage, it being a complete wreck, all the relationships before that being really tumultuous and abusive, and the liars and the cheaters and the abusers, and thinking to myself, like, what is it about me that has me attract these men? Like, I'm a good person. And yet here I was. But, you know, when I started to do the work, what I realized was that subconsciously, I decided, well, I don't want a good guy because, you know, they're going to leave anyway. So I might as well just pick guys that I'm okay with leaving. But they broke my heart. Like, I remember walking into the room of my boyfriend having sex with somebody else, like that kind of trauma. But, you know, I think that it really shaped me and prepared me for what I do now. And, I remember thinking and praying to God and going, Lord, why? Why do these things happen to me? You know, I've been also molested by like a grandfather figure. I was bullied for most of my, you know, school life for being smart and for being short and asthmatic and having glasses and braces and being poor. And so, you know, as an adult, like there was a lot for me to grapple with and try to find myself. And, you know, I think that, you know, again, there was times when I think to myself, you know, why did this happen to me? But, you know, standing where I'm standing now and meeting the people that I meet, sharing a story that's so similar to mine,
right,
of, you know, having to grow up as an overachiever, as a perfectionist, as a people pleaser, because of these things that we experienced as children, I now realize like, oh, that's why that happened. Hmm. So I can be that compassionate, loving, understanding space that not only says, hey, I understand, but like, no, I understand. I got the t-shirt, I got the socks, I got the hat, like I've been there, done that, you know. So yeah, so that's, you know, and now I get to be in this beautiful marriage with my husband Mike for the last 18 years. And, you know, as a little girl, I was very, you know, a very romantic person, and I used to always dream about this, my Prince Charming. I love Disney movies. Can you tell? And he is better than all those reiterations that I had envisioned for myself. And every day I get to spend my life with this human who just thinks I am the best thing since sliced bread. And I really strive to be the woman he thinks I am.
Well, that was a Hallmark moment, wasn't it? My goodness, that was a beautiful story. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think it brings hope as well to those who think that exactly what you were going through, they may be going through, or something similar.
Yeah. I think, you know, at the end of the day, what I realize, what my job is, because, you know, again, I'm a perfectionist and I want to, you know it all. But, you know, I discovered really quickly that if I can just be there for people to have them feel like they're not alone, to have them feel heard, to know that they're not the only ones who have been abused, who have had mommy, daddy issues, whatever that is, to let them know that A, it's okay. B, it doesn't have to define them. And like you said, there's hope to have a life that is by design. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years, is really breaking through and overcoming all the things that were given to me by default, and really creating something extraordinary from that.
Again, beautifully stated. And we're going to dissect that a little bit more as we go through your story, of course. But yeah. I have to ask you, you met the Queen of England. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and she came to Vancouver, where the University of British Columbia resides. And part of the university is a hospital. And so they were opening expanding one of the wings of the hospital, and she was invited to come and cut the ribbon. Now, my mom works at the hospital, so she got wind of that she was coming. And this was around the same time I had started dance school. So, you know, a lot of curtsying, I was doing tap and ballet, and I was so excited. I'm like, oh my gosh. And at the time, you know, she was my idol. She was always on TV. And I thought, wow, I get to meet her or I get the chance. And, you know, and I'd watch kids like giving her flowers. And I'm like, I want to do that. Like, why not? So we go, and we, you know, on the way there, there's a grocery store, and I make my mom stop, and I'm like, Mom, we don't have flowers for the Queen. Like, what if she asks me for flowers and I don't have anything to give her?
Aww.
And my mom just kind of rolls her eyes, and she's like, okay, fine. You know, just to shut me up, she went and got me like the cheapest, I think they were like $2 daisies. Like, they were like the ugliest yellow daisies, but, you know, she just wanted me to be happy. So she got me these flowers. So the way that they had it sorted out, it was sort of outside the sort of covered walkway, and they had put yellow rope between the columns. And so the people stood behind the columns behind the yellow rope. And then they had this big, great place. And there was RCMP, there was police, there was everybody there. And they had told all the parents, make sure your children stay behind the yellow line. Now, I'm tiny, so this yellow this yellow rope was not in my visibilities, you know, but at the same time, I don't think it would have mattered. But anyway, so here I am, like, totally anticipating to meet this woman. Like, I don't know, you know, when you're five, you're like, of course I'm going to meet the queen. Like, why wouldn't I? You know, the thought of like, oh, I might not meet her ever crossed my mind. So I was pretty determined. So anyway, the time comes and I start to hear the roar and, you know, it's happening. And, you know, again, I'm really little and I'm probably about three rows back of people. So all I could see were feet walking by me, a lot of feet. And I realized, like, oh, wait, I'm not going to get to her. And I distinctly, Carol, remember this moment where I thought, oh, I guess that's it. You know, I guess I lost my chance. And then there was this little voice in me that was like, no, this is my only chance. Like, heck no, I'm not going to. And next thing I knew, I was running towards her.
Oh, my goodness.
She's like 20, 30 feet down the walkway. And now people are turning around and freaking out, and the police are running after me, and the RCMP are trying to stop me and hold me back. And so she hears the commotion, she turns around and sees me, and, you know, she sees this little girl. And so everybody, so she just waves everybody off, and she comes back to where I was, and she looks at me and she says, hello, dear, are these flowers for me?
Oh my word.
And I said, yes, Your Majesty. And I give her the flowers and I do this curtsy. And right at that moment, a newspaper photographer took a picture.
No way.
So I have a picture, right, with Carrie looking up at her in a curtsy as she's holding my flowers, and my mom is behind me and my sister and my grandma, and their faces are like priceless. They're like in absolute shock. And, you know, I got into the front page of the newspaper the next day.
Was it in any other magazines or anything?
I don't know. All I know, it was in the newspaper. I think the UBC had it, their own newspaper. I don't know where else it got published, but that's where my mom found it. So she just took all the copies that she could find and cut them out and sent them to all her friends. And but, you know, I framed that photo, and then it sat in my garage for about 10 years until she passed away. And so when she passed away, I went and dug it up. And I kept it. It's actually, if you look in my office, it's in the back, in the corner of my room. And I kept it because I wanted to remind myself of how fearless I was in that moment.
Right.
And that it paid off. And, you know, leaving corporate, starting your own business, you know, following your heart, not knowing where it's going to lead, if it's going to be a success or a failure, it is very challenging. And so I keep that photo to keep me focused and remind myself that that's who I want to get back to. Because I think as adults, we lose that fearlessness.
Yes.
And so, I keep it as my little motivator. She motivates me.
What an amazing story. I absolutely love it. And you drew such a perfect picture of it too. I saw every moment, except what kind of dress you were wearing.
funny enough, I'm wearing my favorite dress, and it's like a red plaid with white tights and black shoes. And then I'm pretty sure it was winter time because my jacket's pretty thick. But I definitely was looking my best that day. So I was pretty happy.
What did your parents end up saying? Your mom?
She was just floored. Well, it was funny because she has in the photo, she's holding her camera, but she never ended up taking a photo because she was just such in shock. And so that was, I think, one of the things she talks about is how regretful she was that she was, like, you know, 2 feet away from the queen and her daughter, and was unable to take the shot.
Well, again, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. I will share that story too. All right, yeah. So let's fast forward a bit, and I want to hear the story about your parents and forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my dad left, as I mentioned, and they had their baby. And I remember, you know, we're Catholic, and I remember one of my most vivid memories of that time when my parents were separated was my mom at church. Like, we would be walking down the street and she'd see a church and she'd like, kids, we're going to go in here. And, you know, just sitting on the pew and like waiting for my mom to be done. But that was a memory that's like bore into my mind. Anyway, fast forward 3 years later, her prayers would be answered and my dad would come back and ask for forgiveness. Huh. He got sick. He was found out that he had double renal failure and needed a kidney transplant. So he couldn't work. So his girlfriend kicked him out. And he came back, and my mom is a nurse. So he came back to my mom and said, can I come home? And my mom said, yes, under two conditions. Number one, you never go back there. You're here. If you're here, you're here. And number two, we just forgive and we forget and we don't talk about it anymore. And she truly kept her word. She never hung it over his head whenever they got into an argument. It never came up. And my dad became the best father, best husband, started going to church, and they spent a lot of time together. And then I guess it would have been maybe 3 or 4 years later, he would get his kidney transplant, and then he would live for another 13 years. And, you know, my family got to be whole and to spend that time together. And when he passed, we were right with him. And I sometimes think about what would have happened had my mom not forgiven him. Would he have passed away alone? Would we have been there but maybe had resentment? Like, what might have happened? And so when I hear about families being torn apart over really unnecessarily, in my opinion, it makes, you know, I don't think people realize just the impact and the potential losses that that might have been or will have been because of this decision. And so I really, you know, of course I want to save marriages, but if people are truly unhappy and we've done the work and it's just unworkable, that's okay. But I believe that people don't do the work. They have too much ego, too much pride, and they don't actually resolve the childhood wounds that actually have nothing to do with their partner. Their partner is just the trigger for something that has not been healed. And so that's why I incorporate all the techniques that I do in the work that I do to help people realize what's really what they're really dealing with. And oftentimes it's not the partner. It's actually something else much, much deeper.
Do you think that that impacted your life to the point that you ended up doing what you're doing now?
100%. You know, doing when I did the work, what I saw. So, reverse a couple years back. That so I was married before I met Mike. I've been married before, so Mike's my second husband. So when I started to do the work, I was going through not quite divorce, but you know, probably a couple months before that all happened. And at that time, I blamed him for not being the husband I wanted him to be. I was frustrated. I was mean. I was trying to change him. And when I did this course and started to realize like, oh, wait, it's me and I need to get responsible for my stuff. What I saw was that, you know, those decisions that I made about my dad or about myself when my dad left was playing into this relationship. And what I got responsible for was marrying someone that I kind of knew wasn't the best fit. But truly, I was just afraid to be alone. And so then I kind of just settled and then tried to change him. And then so when I saw this, when I had my little breakthrough, I was able to talk to him and just say, listen, I am so sorry for judging you, for being mean, for trying to change you, for, you know, for everything. Mm-hmm. And you're great the way you are. And it doesn't work for me. It's not the marriage that I want, and I want to get divorced. And so we got to complete that marriage quite quickly. With $80, we went to the law courts, we signed the papers, we went out for dinner, and that was it. Like, it was a pretty clean break, but it really took for me to get responsible for how I had been thinking about him when really what was at the core of everything was what had happened with my dad and the decisions I made about myself and my worthiness in that moment. But I did see it. I needed someone to point it out. And that person was a coach. And so that's why I really started to fall in love with coaching and going, wow, like to be that person who's a stand for someone else in such a loving and powerful way. And sometimes it stings, it hurts. You know, you don't want to hear that you're not being responsible or you're not listening or that you know, there is something for you to deal with. But so powerful. And I think I'm really effective in this because I'm not just someone who goes and, you know, looks at you and goes, okay, this is what's wrong with you. I'm like, no,
right.
I see you in me, or I see myself in you. I know what that's like. And so they're able to trust me and follow the process that I've put myself through many, many times to get on the other side of it.
Which is empathy.
Yeah.
100%. In a nutshell. Right.
And that is so missing in this on this planet, mm-hmm. isn't it? Like we're mm-hmm. so, compassion is so missing. We're taught to suck it up, or there's no excuse, or, you know, all this just, and we have no idea what's going on with other people, what they've been through. You know, we throw words around like narcissism and, you know, being selfish. It's like, we don't know. And so, you know, in that moment when I thought about, do I go through this divorce or not? One of the concerns is, well, what are people going to think about me?
Of course.
Definitely my mom, right? What's my mom going to think? Mm-hmm. But I realize it doesn't matter what anyone says because no one's been in my shoes. No one's lived my life. They can't tell me what to do. They're going to tell me what to do based on their life, on their experience, on their fears and limitations. And so I chose powerfully that this is what I wanted. And I knew my mom would be very upset. And I was okay with that. I'm like, I am going to take full responsibility for her behavior and her reaction, because I know that this is going to break her heart and I don't mean to, and I'm just going to be okay with whatever it is and however long it takes for her to come around. And she didn't talk to me or my husband for 2 years.
Wow.
She was so heartbroken. Yeah. And she had a really close relationship with my ex-husband, because he came around a few months after my dad passed away. So he kind of took on that male role in her life. And we didn't share anything about what was going on between us. It was 1 minute we were great, the next minute we were getting divorced. And so it was a shock on so many levels.
Of course.
So when, you know, I met Mike, which was, you know, shortly after I got divorced, my mom was like, not happy. she said, I needed time to mourn. And I'm like, mourn what? Like this marriage shouldn't have happened in the beginning. Like I knew a week after we got back from our honeymoon, I was like, this is like so many red flags, but they were not there before we got married. And so I tolerated that relationship for 2.5 years longer than I should have. And so by the time I decided that this was it, there was no regret and there was no question. I'm like, I knew exactly what there was to do.
There are so many people who are listening that can totally relate with that entire scenario and all the parts thereof. So I really appreciate relating. And, you know, I think all of us have some part of that story that we're going to talk about next. And we're going to break down on how those who are so unhappy, whatever kind of relationship it is, doesn't necessarily just have to be a marriage, but other types of relationships. And also how you can help people to deal with roadblocks and failures and mindsets. Mm. So we're going to take a very short 30-second break. And when we come back, you're going to share that with us. And I thank you.
Carol Graham would like to show you the path from misery to miraculous triumph in her fast-paced memoir, Battered Hope. She relates her determination to succeed as someone who experienced one horrendous nightmare after another. Gang raped and left for dead, loss of a child, husband falsely imprisoned, and cancer. Nothing could break her tenacity or faith. No matter what you face, heartache, loss, suffering, or injustice, Carol will illustrate how she became a victor the same way you can. The secret is to never, ever give up hope. Order your copy at Amazon or batteredhope.blogspot.com.
Janelle Green has been sharing her story with us today. And I'm sure that the audience, many of you, have related to several of the things that she said. I certainly did. And I appreciate the way she painted the picture, even the picture of her meeting the Queen. She is a storyteller, and it's exciting to have somebody who is that clear share from their heart. So I thank you for that, Janelle. Now we're going to, and also the story of your parents' forgiveness. Again, so many people can learn from that, can glean from it, and also relate to it. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about one of your passions, which is to help people who are unhappy. What a huge mission that is. Mm-hmm. And especially in light of what's going on in the world today, I'm sure you as a coach hear this more often than you ever did in the past. Mm-hmm. So tell us how they do that, how they can change their focus. And also when they're up against roadblocks and failures and all the emotions that are involved, tell us what they can do.
Well, you know, you said it perfectly, to change the focus. And, you know, when I do a consult with clients, you know, they'll spend half an hour, even maybe 45 minutes telling me all the things they don't like and what they want to change. And so when they're done, I say, okay, that's great. So tell me, what is it that you actually want? And there's silence. And they say to me, I've never thought about that. Well, then no wonder you're not happy, because you don't even think about what makes you happy. All you think about is what doesn't make you happy. And so that is really, I think, the first thing we got to do is shift our energy from unworthiness, frustration, overwhelm, anxiousness, all of that, and flip that on its head and really like, okay, how do I want to feel? Who do I want to become? What are the changes I need to make in a positive light? And so we want to take it from love, from fear to love, from doubt to confidence, from, you know, unworthiness to self-love. And, you know, self-love is, I think, one of those things that people don't truly understand. And, you know, to be honest, that's a recent thing for me too. You know, if you asked me 10 years ago, hey, Janelle, do you love yourself? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? But when I'm, you know, when I got really down to it, when I started to hear how I was speaking to myself, how hard I was on myself, how I had very little compassion for my own humanity and spent so much time in the realm of guilt and shame, I'm like, I don't love myself. And so, you know, this journey of life is always evolving and expanding. And people always want to ask me, so when is my life going to be perfect? And I'm like, your life will never be perfect. This is an evolving thing. And as much as I think that I have done the work and I'm quote unquote enlightened, life constantly throws stuff at you. And you just got to learn the tools and the techniques, your own, that really work for you. And so, I mean, that's partly why I love this work, is it's never boring. It's never the same thing. We're always changing. And so there's always something to grapple with, always, right? If I'm a six-figure coach, I'm like, okay, well, how do I become a seven-figure coach? And what is the gap that has me not be able to fulfill what it is that I want to fulfill? And so I think number one is, you know, changing the focus of your energy. I think that, gratitude, a experience of abundance, is something that many of us don't know how to create within ourselves, because as children, we were taught a very different way. We were taught, you know, when we're good, now we're worthy of love.
Right.
When we're bad little girls and boys, we don't. And so we beat ourselves up. We punish ourselves. We speak very harshly to ourselves. And so it's so hard to make that shift to love and joy and connection. So I think the second thing we need to do is become aware that that's what's going on. And so for me, I love journaling, because sometimes I feel all these things, but I don't, trying to connect the dots is a little bit harder. And sometimes, you know, I know consciously what I should be thinking, but my subconscious, my inner world is like BS. Right? So I think, you know, for me, journaling is really, really valuable. And just getting clarity on like what's actually going on with me emotionally and also in my thoughts, because our thoughts create our emotions. But the problem is when our emotions, when the servant becomes the master, now we get caught in this vicious cycle. And so we need to be able to turn that around and make sure that the thoughts are the ones that are running the show, not the emotions. Because emotions, especially for women, they can take us anywhere, anytime with, you know, it doesn't have to make any sense. And it can really take us off, you know, off focus of what it is that is what it is that we actually want to be and achieve in life. So I think that's, those are some of the things. One of my favorite sayings goes like this: pain and suffering only exist when you resist what is so. I'm going to say that again. Pain and suffering only exist when you resist what is so. So, you know, I remind myself this when I'm feeling really frustrated, because it means that I'm probably resisting something about my life. My body shouldn't be this way. My family shouldn't be this way. My finances shouldn't be this way. The world shouldn't be this way. And that's what creates our frustration. But when we can just get to a point where like, hey, it is what it is, and take responsibility for how it is now, now we can actually take the right actions. If you look at the word responsibility, most people think responsibility is in the realm of faults and blame and obligation. But in my world, responsibility is just simply the ability to respond. And we can't respond if we're not in power. And so we really need to take the power back and say, yeah, I did this to myself. Yep, I did this to my body. My body is the way it is. My finances are the way it is. And start there. And from there, now you can create something extraordinary and powerful. But you can't do it from a place of, no, it's not my fault. It's the world's fault. It's this, it's someone else. It's someone else or something else's fault. And I have no control. That's what disempowerment looks like.
So you kind of gave us an outline. Now give us maybe three steps to start with.
I think we need to slow down, first of all. We need to pause. This is a hard one for me too. But to truly pause and just, we have a really, and when I say we, I'm going to say I have a really hard time being present. I'm either thinking about yesterday or what happened last week, or I'm planning for the future. And really being present in the what's so right now with the people in front of me, for me, is actually, it takes a lot of work to do that. And I think a lot of other people have that same issue because we live in such a fast-paced world. Okay, what do I need to do next? It's all about the doing. But I think what we need to do is pause and get to the beingness of who we are. And I think sometimes we don't even know who that is, because we were told our entire lives to be this certain kind of person.
Right.
Rather than just actually listening to, okay, who am I authentically? And I know for myself, a lot of my life was about trying to be like my mom, a strong woman who never complained, who was like a Mother Teresa to everyone. She never asked for help. And I saw how that impacted my life negatively. And it probably wasn't until my 40s that I realized, like, you know, as much as I love my mom and those are admirable traits, it also keeps me from being open and vulnerable and asking for help and crying and just being with whatever is there for me in that moment, because I have a story that crying is weakness. Or asking for help is weakness. And so I've had to change my mindset around that and just tell myself, you know, vulnerability is power. Vulnerability creates connection. Authenticity is power. And, you know, sometimes when I'm on podcasts or with, you know, with my clients or in consults, people say to me, Janelle, there's like this glow about you. And I the only thing I can think of is just that, you know, I know who I am. I know my values.
Yes, yes.
I'm not afraid to show my scars. I love myself, even the parts of myself that I, you know, that aren't exactly perfect. And I know that I'm here to learn a lesson. And so I really try to take the attitude of seeing each challenge as breadcrumbs to my next evolution. I see it as almost like a test, and I see it as valuable feedback for myself to say, okay, here's my next level of opportunity to gain some life lessons that will, you know, that will probably in the future come really handy. And so, you know, I've had some pretty massive breakdowns in the last year. And standing where I'm standing now, looking back, I'm like, wow, that was pretty extraordinary. Like my husband's father passed away in April. And it was a really, really difficult time for both of us. For him, obviously losing his parent very quickly. And for me, being without Mike for 10 days while I am also grieving. And what I discovered during that time was, at the time, my mom was out of town. She was in the Philippines. My best friend was dealing with her own stuff. My husband was in Newfoundland with his family. So I was alone, and the support structures that I would normally have were not available to me the way that I'd expected. And so I had to learn to be my own best friend. I had to learn to go to others and ask for help. And I also learned that most people don't actually know how to listen. And that was such a humbling experience. I noticed, like, I went to one person and they start, you know, and I'm telling her how lonely I am and how just everything I was feeling. And she started to tell me how great her life is. And it just made me feel worse. And then I went to another friend and I said to her, you know, again, I'm so lonely. And her response was to just completely ignore everything I said. And I was like, I got frustrated because I'm like, wow, these people don't know how to listen. But also I was like, this is so interesting, because then I really get how my ability to listen is so valuable and rare.
Exactly.
So I think everything that we go through in life, if we look at it in the right way, can be a value rather than this horrible thing that happened or experience. And I'm like, yeah, it sucks in the moment. But if you can shift your mind to ask yourself, what can I learn from this? If this was a test or a learning lesson, what is the lesson that I'm about to learn? And then that way we're leaning into it and not resisting it and just going with the flow. And trust, I think trusting in God, trusting in universe, trusting that whatever it is that's happening in this moment is exactly what's meant to be, and it's perfect.
Is this what you would call mindset hacks? You referred to that in your, in my notes, and just maybe explain that a little bit.
Yeah, I think mindset hacks is just, you know, your own personal, I guess, you know, toolbox of things that you can draw from when your thoughts and your mindset and your emotions take you down that black hole. It's like, how do you pull yourself out? Right. So I think the first step is, first of all, becoming your own best friend. Because when you know how to talk to a best friend, you then know how to talk to yourself.
Good point.
Right. Yes. And then the second thing is, okay, what does this best friend, what is it that I need to hear? And, you know, let's talk about relationships for a second. One of the frustrations that, you know, I hear within couples is, for example, the woman will say, he needs to comfort me. He needs to reassure me. And so the guy says, well, I do reassure you. And she says, yeah, but you're not doing it right. And so I say to her, okay, well, tell him, what is it that you need to hear? What are the exact words that you want him to come out of his mouth? And so she'll respond with, well, I don't want to tell him because then it's not authentic and it's not genuine. It's like, but that's BS, because when he is authentic and genuine, it's not good enough for you. And you criticize him for it. So why not set him up to win? I think that's one of the biggest setbacks and issues I see with couples, is we expect our partner to know exactly what it is we want, how we want it, when we want it, how, why we want it, where, you know, all of that. And they're not mind readers. And so for me, my husband, I believe, like, I train my husband, you know, in the beginning, he would, like, you know, when I would talk, he would interrupt me or give me advice. And I'm like, babe, you just stop trying to change me, stop trying to fix me, stop giving me advice. I just need you to listen. And so I sat him down and I said, babe, here's what I need from you. Okay. When you see me, like, really frustrated and upset, I just need you to make eye contact with me. Show me you love me, care for me. Don't say anything. Just sit there. Tell me, you know, empathize with me, be my friend. And when I'm done talking, tell me you love me and then go get me some ice cream. So he knows the formula to my heart. And I know for him, when he's upset, I know what he needs because I know his love languages. And love languages are very important to know.
Yes.
His is physical touch and verbal affirmation. So I know when he's having a crappy day, he needs a hug. He needs a couple kisses around his face. He needs to know that I love him, that he's amazing. And when he's feeling emotional, he just needs to know that it's okay to feel emotional, that it's normal. And I just validate him. I appreciate him. I give him hugs. I give him kisses. I tell him he's the best. And it's over, like 5 minutes.
Right.
Same thing when I'm upset. It lasts for about 5 minutes. And it is so quick. We don't need to sit in all the gunk and the darkness and the loneliness and frustration for longer than we need to. And so when we have these tools that we can, first of all, talk about what our expectations are, and then secondly, have agreement of what that expectation is, now we have a game plan, because when we're in a stress situation, all of our common sense goes absolutely out the window. So when you have a game plan, you just follow it. You don't need to think about it. You don't need to come up with like creative and genius ideas. You just need to follow the plan. And so my husband and I probably have not had an argument, and I'm going to guess 8 to 10 years, because our communication is so strong.
I can totally attest to that. As you were talking, I was chuckling to myself. My husband and I have been married 52 years.
Wow.
And after, this is both of our second marriages as well. So we learned something from the first ones, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, what I ended up doing, and this has to be decades ago already, when I realized my husband didn't have the same tools of communicating that I did, because we're two totally different people.
Yeah.
So I knew that if we got in the middle of an argument or whatever, just as you're explaining, that he needed to understand what I needed, and, you know, vice versa. So what I did was I wrote it down for him.
Yeah.
So that he could have
step
it.
Step one.
Yeah. That's step one, exactly.
Yeah.
And just like you said, I can't remember our last argument, except which way to turn on the highway.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, so it is communication, and we can't say enough good about it. So I thank you for sharing that. That was very descriptive, and I trust that the audience will take those tools and those ideas and implement them in their own relationships. So now... Mm-hmm. In summary, would you have any specific thing that you would like to say to the audience, and anything you want to offer the audience?
Yeah, if there was sort of a piece of wisdom, you know, I guess last quote, be the change you wish to see in the world and in your relationships. If you want more love, give more love. If you want to be accepted, be accepting. If you want to be able to forgive, forgive yourself. You know, you cannot give to another what you do not have for yourself. And I think forgiveness is one of those things that I love talking about, because I believe that that is the key. That is the key to peace and happiness. We cannot have that without forgiveness, because we're human. We deal with other humans who are also flawed. And so unless we understand forgiveness, but I think a lot of us think that forgiveness is this thing that, well, if I do it, I let somebody off the hook and that makes what they did okay. No, forgiveness is all about the inner work. Because if you think about it, the upset that we experience with another person, we put ourselves in our own emotional jail, and we do this for years, decades, you know, we're the ones who suffer. The other person doesn't even know that we're doing that to ourselves.
Right.
And we spend half of our life and so much time dwelling in things that are out of our control, and has to do with someone else who probably didn't even realize that they were hurting you or doing the wrong thing, thinking that they were doing the right thing. And so I think forgiveness is really about freeing ourselves from the emotional prison that we put ourselves into, right? Like, for example, my dad leaving. There I was, like, you know, here I am 20 years later, still thinking about that thing that happened. It's gone. My dad's passed away. My half brother is in my life, and he's extraordinary. I love him. And yet here I am still stuck to those stories of unworthiness, can't trust, unlovable. It's like, why? there's something that, you know, pulls us to that place of wanting to continue to beat ourselves up and not live in the present and make ourselves small. And so for me, it's real. The work has been to, first of all, forgive myself, forgive that little 9-year-old standing there at the window, making up these stories about herself, which weren't true. And then from there, then I can start to really, truly forgive my dad. But it has to happen in that order. You first and then the other person. And you don't need the other person to forgive them.
Very, very well stated. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, this concludes our time together. And I've taken lots of notes. I'm sure that the audience has as well. And I appreciated everything that you shared with us today and your stories as well. And I thank you for being on Never, Ever Give Up Hope.
Thank you for listening to Never, Ever Give Up Hope, featuring Carol Graham. Did you know that most people succeed because they are determined to? Quitting was never an option. Carol loves your comments and will respond to each one. So please subscribe and review this podcast. A rating of 5 stars would be outstanding and appreciated. Remember, if you are still here, there is always hope.